Good evening and welcome to this special edition of Editing Aloud. We're going to be with you for a full hour today, but kind of broken into two parts. The first from now until 9 o'clock and the second from 9:30. TV scheduling is a tough taskmaster, and I'm grateful to our producers for finding the extra time. The issue is the Sunday Times and the pressure engulfing it and its editor to reveal more and apologize more for what has become self-evident were major lapses in reporting and editing in three huge stories which directly assisted the project of state capture during the two administrations of President Jacob Zuma. I'd like this hour to reach some consensus on what can reasonably be done to account and possibly atone for the errors made and the damage done to people and institutions. But first, let me introduce my panel. First is the Deputy Managing Editor of Tiso Black Stars Media Division, Mishweshwe Munari, in the white shirt. Thanks very much for coming on. Most of the rest of the company leadership, including most of its editors and the editor of the Sunday Times, are in Shanghai as guests of the Chinese government. We're also joined by Stembiso Mswami, the editor of Sowetan, and former political editor of the Sunday Times, and briefly deputy editor of the Sunday Times. And we're also joined by Franz Kruger, who is I don't want to get your title wrong. He's an adjunct professor of journalism at Wits University and a very experienced journalist in his own right. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Franz, you were the co-author with Anton Haber of an earlier report into newsroom failures at the Sunday Times. Because that surely is what issue here, a series of very serious structural failures in the newsroom, which had they not occurred, even if journalists were deliberately trying to file tainted copy, wouldn't have succeeded. And clearly something serious and transparent has to be done to fix that. That early investigation was done under Monli Makanya's editorship, then Ray Hartley ran the paper when the Cato Manor police death squad stories were run. Felicia Oppelt was there a few years later to oversee the stories that gutted SARS. But let's start here. The other day, Bongani Sikoko published a second successive apology for the stories. That's his job, even though he wasn't on the paper when they ran. The apology was sincere and long, and you have to feel for the man, but it didn't cut it. The country wants more answers, more justice. And it was best epitomized, I thought, by this Facebook posting by Pete Richer, a guy I've known and respected for more than 40 years. He was forced out of SARS by the state capture project. And I'm going to ask Mishweshwe Munari to just talk a little bit to what Pete Richer posted. And Mosh, there was, even on reading what Pete Richer is saying and reading again Bongani Sikoko's apology and retraction of those stories, of all of them now, not just SARS as he did the previous Sunday, there is some emotional detachment there. It might be because he wasn't the editor. But Pete Richer in that posting there is looking for more. He's basically saying, why is it so difficult for them, that's Tiso Blackstar, the Sunday Times, to admit fully that they were used, their management has failed to institute proper systems, and that some members of their staff were complicit in the state capture project?
The editor of the Sunday Times, Bongani, fully, openly and honestly admitted to the system's failures. And also he admitted to the fact that while they may have been focusing on stories that any journalist would want to look and investigate, there were manipulations going on, there were political projects that was going on, and the failure actually emanated from the fact that there was no focus of that manipulation, which means there was gullibility, which means there were no journalistic checks to say what is the motive behind these sources, what are they trying to achieve, which if it had happened, they would have understood that actually they have been used, or alternatively, their stories will be exploited or abused by these sinister sources to achieve a political goal. And that's where we failed, and that's why the editor of the Sunday Times said that's the failure. It's not like, which I would want to disagree with those who are saying that deliberately and intentionally, the reporters and the editor of the Sunday Times then, the editors of the Sunday Times then, conspired or sat down with these sinister forces to destroy these institutions, to make sure that a lot of people are kicked out.
But why did they not listen to the voices who were telling them? For instance, on the SARS stories, Pearly Joubert was jumping up and down in Cape Town saying that this is complete rubbish, to the point where she had to resign because nobody would listen to her. And when she asked to speak to Felicia Opelt, Felicia said she didn't want to talk, didn't want to hear what she said.
No, that's why I say I do agree. As to the fact that there was a failure to look at the other side.
Yeah.
And had they engaged fully the other side and not just went to them for comment, I think that's what Mr. Risha is pointing out there, to say, don't come to me to say, what's your comment about the story? Because you have already made a conclusion that your first source is truthful about the information that he has. But if you say to me, I do have an information, let's sit down, you would, as a journalist, you would be able to independently discover the truth between your source and the people, the subject
I've
of your critical
I've invited both Ray Hartley and Rob Rose onto the show. Rob is in China and Ray declined to come on for the moment, but he did send me a WhatsApp message, which I'll read out to everybody in a moment. But the other, the other voice shouting, no, this is just check this, was on the Death Squad story, where Johan Botha is now saying, as he did in the Sunday Times, that he told Stefan Hofstetter just to go and check two or three things: check the helicopter logs, check whether he handed in evidence at the police station that he pointed to, just over the road. Surely that reporter comes back and tells his editor. Or is there no connection? Are these investigators completely sort of locked out of the system? I mean, are they their own masters?
No, I agree with you to say General Boysen is right to say our journalist ignored his information. And I personally attribute that to one of the failures in journalism, where people are married to their sources, where we believe too much what our sources say. And actually, it's not the duty of journalists to believe their sources, but the duty of the journalists to get to the bottom of the story. And had they done that, they would have realized that actually the truth lies somewhere in between. And secondly, they would have realized that they may have been played by these sources, especially when you know that some of these sources are, clearly have a political motive.
Sure.
You know, that's why I agree to say we're gullible to the manipulation and the political machinations. But where I disagree is where people are accusing us of deliberately and complicitly engaged in the state capture in order to destroy these institutions.
Yeah. Very briefly, Stembiso, you were on the paper for a long time as political editor, briefly deputy editor. Was there a culture in the newsroom of the investigators being sort of above the law?
Not necessarily above the law, but I think the kind of treatment you gave to just general reporters, whether it's political journalists or business journalists or general crime reporters, was different from the treatment you gave to the investigations guys, because the assumption is that they are quite senior. The assumption is that they deal with quite sensitive information. So sometimes if questions arise in the newsroom, you will get to a point where you believe that maybe the information is too sensitive to continue asking, which then led to some of these questions that were being asked from outside coming to the newsroom. But if you are being told that you don't fully understand what is going on, then it becomes acceptable. So
yeah.
I think that has been one of the weaknesses with some of these stories. Even the physical location of the investigations unit when we were in the old building, they were not in the same space as all the other news reporters. They had their own.
Did they report to the news editor?
Indirectly.
How is that possible? I mean, that is actually, that's staggering, actually.
Yeah, they reported.
Absolutely staggering.
I think it
started. Who did that?
Well, it's the first investigations unit, which was quite good, which, by the way, also involved Mzee, started under Mike Robertson. So I think after the investigations unit was disbanded, a new one that started followed the same route, where the guys really report to the editor or the deputy editor, but the news editors just get informed.
I want to ask you, I didn't introduce him. We have Max Dupree on the phone line from Cape Town, and Max, we'll talk to you in a minute, but I wanted just to ask Franz Kruger, who did the original report into the Sunday Times newsroom, whether any of this sounds familiar.
Oh, completely. And I mean, besides having worked on the on that report, I mean, I was a sub on the Sunday Times in the early 2000s for some time after I'd left the SABC. And one has that memory of the unit being in a separate room with a digital lock on the door. And as subs, if you had queries on story, you couldn't go in there. You had to kind of really carefully move to get access to the team.
Who put the lock there?
That I can't tell you.
Do you know? Does anybody know who put the lock
there? Look, we take responsibility. When you talk about system failures, that's what we are talking about. Yeah. To say there was a culture, which, to be honest, you could actually say more than 15 years old, where investigative journalists were treated as people who were not accountable in this.
They were in fact a rogue unit, in a way.
I wouldn't put it that way.
Well, why not? It's
but that led to a situation where their stories were not tested, they were not interrogated by a wider news diary, which comprises of senior editorial leadership. Because in that sense, someone would have given a different dimension, different perspective. And to me, that's why Bongani Sithole for the record and benefit of the viewers, made sure that actually there's still investigations, journalists, but they should be accountable and they should go through the editing process that everyone is expected
to. What recommendations did you make, Franz, in your report originally?
Well, there was a whole long list of recommendations, but certainly, you know, with regard to the investigative. With the investigative unit, we felt that it needed to be better integrated and better controlled. I mean, one understands, of course, that there are stories that that involve highly sensitive documents, highly sensitive sources that need to be safeguarded over a period of some weeks, months even. And I think that, you know, that one does need to recognize that. But, of course, it can't become a law unto itself.
Yeah.
I mean, our concern, I think, when we penned the report was that, you know, there was a culture there was a lack of skepticism, I want to say. It was built into the way in which editorial meetings were held. There was very little challenging that went on. There was a kind of hostile questioning that went on, which sought to undermine rival kind of departments. But there was not the kind of skepticism that, you know, that one would look for. So, for instance, there wasn't a chief sub. And often, as somebody said to us at the time, the chief sub is the troll under the bridge, the person who kind of throws the obstacles into the air. And you need that.
Yeah.
You need somebody to say, actually, there is an alternative explanation for this. Or have you checked this? Or what happened there? It's one of a number of checks and balances, I think. And of course, you know, the story, I was looking at the report this morning. What is interesting about that whole exercise was that compared to what we're dealing with now, the missteps were way smaller.
Yeah.
You know, there was a story about Transnet at the time selling the sea, and it was just kind of funny in a way. I mean, in this case, these are stories that have really
ruined the country.
Crucial state institutions, and of course
We're going to talk to Max Dupree after this little break. And please don't go away. We'll see you in a few seconds. Welcome back. So with us on the line from Cape Town, we have Max Dupree, who's also written a column following Bongani Sithole's apology on Sunday, saying that more needs to be done. And we should have that on the screen for you, but we also want to talk to you, Max, about the Sunday Times itself. I mean, I'm sure you and I, more or less the same age, have been reading the Sunday Times for more than 50 years now, and it's become a different paper from the one I remember. I mean, what do you see it when you look at the paper now? You're on the phone, Max, very patiently. Max the patient. But on screen is a takeout from your column suggesting that, you know, the Zondo Commission might be a good way to interrogate what's happened here. And you basically say, without the names of all of the people involved in this sordid chapter, we won't know the whole story of the state capture project that took our country to the brink. And quite rightly, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you. But just talk about the paper that you knew and that you see today.
Yeah, I was a former political correspondent of the Sunday Times. So I spent a few years of my life there. It is a crucial part of our media landscape. The Sunday Times, well, my first part of my life at the Sunday Times was under Tertius Meiberg. And we had our severe clashes. But there was a culture, an old-school culture of check and double-check and going through the ranks, whoever you were. I mean, I never got a piece of copy in the paper without Meiberg not seeing it. So this latest thing of an investigative unit, like almost the elite unit, that could do whatever it wanted, is something alien to me. And this whole thing hurts me because the Sunday Times is so important in our landscape. And I think the public watching this, if they're wondering why we are sitting here as journalists dripping out our own guts, it's because we care about a crucial paper like the Sunday Times. But also, this is not a usual, ordinary little slip-up. What we're talking about here was instrumental to the capture and paralysis of SARS and of the Hawks. And we, South Africa, has paid for it and is still paying for it and will pay for a long time for it.
Would you agree with me, Max, that it was because it was the Sunday Times? In other words, had these stories appeared, and I mean no disrespect, to City Press or in City Press or the Sunday Independent, that they wouldn't have been taken as seriously as they were?
Yeah, I think that to an extent that is true. The Sunday Times is the biggest, it's the standard, it's supposed to be the Rolls Royce. And I felt pain when I read Bongani Sithoko's second apology. But it also left me feeling like I felt at the Truth Commission hearings when the media bosses were called by Desmond Tutu to come and talk about the media's role in apartheid. And every single one of them, apart from us and the alternative media, sent someone who said, well, I wasn't there. I wasn't responsible for it. So here's a little bit of an explanation. And I also feel sorry for some of the other journalists who we haven't mentioned, who get mentioned in this, and it reminds me of a Springbok sub who's been sent on to take over. And 3 minutes later, because of warnings that the referee had given, that guy gets a yellow card, although he had done nothing wrong. But my question to the Sunday Times is, why hasn't the paper launched its own investigation as a journalistic project, as a story on who used them, why were they so used? Because we have more or less all the information. Johan Boysen was framed because he was a highly successful Hawk general. He was investigating Tashim Pandey. He was about to jump on him, and he was a Zuma benefactor. Anwar Ramat and Shadrack Sibiya were investigating Richard Ntuli, and they were compromised. The so-called rogue unit of Pillay and Richard and von Lochenberg were investigating all Zuma's rich friends, and all those investigations stopped, and we lost tens and tens of billions in tax money. So this is not an ordinary story, and I think the Sunday Times should do more than just an apology. Actually, treat this as a new story and say.
Can I just ask you if there's a sort of a whistle on your line? Are you near anything, sort of any piece of electronic equipment that might be on?
I am not, and I also hear it. I find it difficult to speak to it.
Okay. Now let's carry on. So you think the Sunday Times ought to treat it as it is a good news story, and it would be a good one to break. And probably your suggestion, I'm sure mine would be, do it through the news editor.
Yeah, I think this is a news story, and it should be done. And I stand on my column, which I see Sunday doesn't agree with, that we should ask Hofstadter and War Africa before somebody, maybe a media body, maybe the Zondo Commission, compel them to out their sources, because these are not journalistic sources. These were nasty, evil agents who can't be treated like whistleblowers. They had a political agenda. This was a political project. And so it's probably criminal. And I think we need the names. And I think we need to go further than the names, because, you know, Felicia Oppel's name is mentioned often here. And I think we need to put into this package that Felicia, when confronted with all this stuff, and Pearly was shouting, and people were screaming all over that this is nonsense, she went to someone who was in the heart of SARS. He was actually on the Cruen Commission. His name was Rudolf Mastenbrock. He's an advocate, and he happened to be her ex-husband. And he vouched for these stories. And I think we should out Rudolf Mastenbrock also and get him before a commission and say, why did you tell Felicia that these stories were correct?
Can I tell him that?
Yeah, sure.
Peter, and respond. Look, Max, the Bongani did consider what you're saying, but his dilemma comes from the fact that we were going to be seen as defensive for the primary reason that every journalist will know that your source has a particular motive, wants to achieve a particular objective. And as a result, it's up to the journalists themselves to verify the information and make sure that whatever is printed ultimately is what they believe is the truth, not necessarily what the source told them. So if we're going to start saying that go and oust your source, then we kind of like pass the buck. We're passing the buck, and it's a dereliction of duty, because it's people who should have verified the information before believing whoever source. I mean, we have all manner of sources, and we know that some of them are not really motivated by the public good, but by the fact that they've got an objective, they've got an agenda. And the failure was for the Sunday Times or whoever was there not to interrogate the agenda and make the conclusion and independently verify the information.
These are not ordinary whistleblowers, and yes, you're correct. Most people who blow the whistle want revenge, or they want to do damage to somebody. But if they speak the truth, their motivation is not so relevant, and they should be protected at all costs, as I have done at great expense to myself many times. But these guys were not sources or whistleblowers in any sense of the word. They were deliberately sent to facilitate the capture and paralysis of state institutions. Point number one. Point number two, this is not just a news story. This is a story of national importance. This is not just about journalism. People who listen to this feel that we don't have a working criminal justice system, and SARS has been crippled, and we're feeling that in when we pay, the state pays its bills, because of these few sources and these few journalists. So it suddenly lifted out as just another story, and I think this ghost will not go to rest unless we know who talked to Njelikazi and Stefan.
This is not going to go away. I mean, people want to know who did this. Sorry, yeah. Franz.
No, I want to echo that. I mean, I don't think one should get stuck on this question of whether these people should be named or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, Max's fundamental point, and I think I would really echo that, is there is a need to understand exactly what happened. And I mean, my point in I tweeted this earlier, you know, in response to Bongani Sikoko's column, which I thought was brave and thoughtful in many ways, is that I think we need to go further, precisely because, as Max says, this is a matter of public, of huge national importance. We need to understand who and how the paper was played, what those mechanisms were. I mean, my understanding is there was some attempt by someone else earlier this year to unpack exactly how this happened, and it became very difficult. One understands that it's difficult, but I think it is necessary to be seen to be doing that, both for the paper itself and for journalism more generally. I mean, the New York Times in the early 2000s was faced with Jason Blair, a young reporter who suddenly it emerged, was fabricating stuff, was making up that he was in places where, that he hadn't visited, making up quotes.
And how did they deal with it?
Well, I mean, of course...
He won a Pulitzer Prize, didn't he, or something? Or?
I'm not sure that went that far. But he was dealt with internally, but then what they embarked on was a huge investigation into exactly what happened and what systemic failures allowed it to happen. And they published a 7,000-word essay on their front page, which kind of unpacked it in a huge amount of detail. They took it as an exercise in reporting what happened in this particular
instance. But Stembisa, and thanks for that, Max and Franz, how difficult would it be to go into a newsroom now and begin, these events are now 8-9 years old in some cases, to begin to remember the sequencing and conversations that go into a rush, I presume, on Saturday afternoon to finalize the front page or whatever it might be. So-and-so whispers something, but did you hear it properly and did you ignore them? Or, you know, how did, unknitting that would be like trying to sort of unscramble eggs.
I agree that it would be difficult, but because the stories went on for such a long time, there would be a lot to remember from people who were there. For instance, one of the claims that was made, I think, with the SARS story, was that one of the reporters was saying they would not see their stories before they are published. I mean, that you can verify easily, because PDFs are sent to reporters. If that didn't happen with him, it would be unusual. But people do read their stories, the stories that they had written. And these guys were senior enough sometimes to call the subs desk and say, change that line, change that sentence. It's issues that you can go back and look into. And I think that sort of activity, whether it's done internally or outside,
there's still records, right? I mean, the computers have all of these exchanges.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted also to respond to Frank's point. Look, I agree with you. If the focus is not going to be about who are these people, but to say how were we played, that we welcome. If there's any, I think even Bongani made the editor of the Sunday Times made that point when he said he would welcome any external investigations and even what SANEF has announced. Because like Max is saying that this is really a matter of national importance. It's not just a question of newsroom failures. We will welcome that if it's going to be about how were we played and how do we prevent this. Because the danger with this, the political climate that we are in as South Africa, we are likely to...
We will see you back if you're enjoying this as much as I am. I hope you are. We'll see you back in half an hour with the rest of the conversation, which will be about how to fix it. Welcome back to Editing Aloud, the second half of an hour-long special. And I hope you're all still there, that you've had your coffee and are back in your seats. I want to just read a WhatsApp message that Ray Hartley, who was editor of the Sunday Times at the time of the Death Squad story, Kato Mana Death Squad story, sent me. I invited him onto the show. He wasn't comfortable. And obviously both Ray Hartley and Rob Rose, who was also on the original byline of that story, under tremendous pressure at the moment, so I understand it. But he said to me, it sickens me to think that those intent on abusing state power for corrupt purposes use the Sunday Times for their ends. I hope that the SANEF investigation will be thorough, independent, and unsparing in its efforts to get to the bottom of what happened. And Jacques Poe, the president's keepers, probably the most famous journalist in the country at the moment, mentioned Ray Hartley and Rob Rose in his column, in the current column he has this week, which some of which will appear on the screen in a moment. There we go. Max, Ray's point doesn't really gel with yours. You want the Sunday Times to investigate itself.
Yes, and not an internal investigation like Anton and others did for them earlier. Yeah. I want them to do this as a news story.
It'll be sort of practice.
This is an investigation. People would read this. It would be a banner headline. It's an important story, and there are sources. I mean, McIntosh and Polela, who was a colonel in the Hawks, tweeted this week that he went to Africa and Nostrata with the rendition story that sank Dramat and Sevilla.
Yeah.
And he said to them, you are being played. You are wrong. And they didn't listen. Now, we can go to McIntosh and ask him.
Yeah.
You were inside the Hawks. Who should we talk to? What evidence do you have?
Yeah.
Take from that. This is a new piece of investigative journalism.
Yeah. Although he's playing a little bit with it because he wants to go to a forum that's acceptable, like I presume the Zondo Commission or a court or something like that. Would he talk to a Sunday Times journalist? One wonders. But and France, I mean, you're talking about the New York Times, isn't it? It investigated itself and probably did very well for itself in doing so. But I just wonder whether there's a capacity on the Sunday Times now to do that. I mean, obviously, there are people still in the building who were involved, but they can't write the story. Somebody else has got to write the story because it involves them. I mean, how do you do that? How do you put that together?
Well, fair point. I mean, the modality, I mean, how that exactly would be done, one would have to have a look at. I mean, it seems to me that there are things that need to happen at different levels. I mean, I think that there is a real need to understand specifically what happened in this case. At the same time, I think that there is a broader question about the role that the media more generally played within state capture. You know, and that takes us into the role, the connection between independent newspapers and the PIC. It takes us into the payments made by MultiChoice to the SABC and Gupta entities and so on. And that clearly is another and broader question. I mean, the SANEF investigation, I think, is really interesting. We will have to see. I think a lot will depend on how that is framed and what that is able to do, and also, frankly, what kind of resources they bring to the table. Because to do an inquiry properly, you need to do it properly. You need to actually make sure that you have the capacity to reach people.
There's no point investigating what the Sunday Times is investigating, because it'll drive everybody mad. I mean, someone has to lead this process.
Yeah. I think we're at a stage now where we're considering, I mean, as people in the field, what is the best way to tackle this going forward.
And what do you think it might be?
I like both of the ideas of an inquiry that looks broadly at state capture. I also do like the idea that Max is putting forward of a really journalistic investigation. How that involves the Sunday Times itself, one would have to see. Clearly, something like the New York Times has way
but
more
you see,
resources.
If you speak to somebody, if a journalist now currently in the building went to speak to Rob Rose and ask him about his role, let's say in the Death Squad story, he would tell you that first of all he was out of the country when the story broke, when the team got the story. Right? It was. The initial source was Amnesty International, actually, who were very concerned with the fact that 43 people had died. I mean, that is a story, and it was worth them paying, Sunday Times paying some attention to it. Rob, and I believe him, right, genuinely, because we've discussed it, he genuinely doesn't remember why his name was on the story in the first place. He says his contribution was nothing. He helped write it. He didn't make calls. Yeah, Max.
Bongani Sithoko, seriously, and I do.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the new rising stars in our profession, and I like the guy.
Yeah.
He's saying in both his apologies that you can trust us now. This is a new Sunday Times.
Yeah.
There's a new management team. There are new journalists. These guys are also now out. So this is there's now an arm's length between that Sunday Times and today's Sunday Times. So today's Sunday Times can investigate that Sunday Times and say, we can review today. This is what happened. This is how the Sunday Times was used then, by whom.
But it's still got to go and ask Pete Rampedi, and it's still got to go and ask Mziwa Africa, and still ask Stefan Hofstetter who their sources were.
Yeah, absolutely.
And why would they tell them?
Well, if they don't tell them, there are other ways, and that's why you have investigative journalists. You go to a guy who's guilty of a crime, he's not going to just commit it. You've got to dig. You've got to go to McIntosh. You've got to go to other sources in the Hawks. You've got to go interrogate Piet Richer and Ivan. They have theories. I mean, some of the theories are in Jan van Rochenberg's book. You go and ask Jacques. He's got some theories.
Yes.
And test them. It's just a piece of investigative journalism.
Is the you've got to actually fund this.
The controversy will be we're funding this as a result that
but the I mean to do this Sunday team Sunday Times needs money and time. And
look, like I said, Bongani made it clear to say we are open to any suggestion because it's not really in our interest to cover up anything.
Yeah.
It's not in Bongani's interest to cover. He was not there. He looked at the – actually, he did internal investigation himself and look at – that is why his conclusion – he was not even pressured by anyone externally. Mm. It was his own conclusion after conducting an internal investigation and making a conclusion to say we – there were a lot of errors, there were a lot of failures, and we have to own up to them. That's why I'm saying that we are, we cannot be defensive about it, especially if there are people who are genuinely concerned about the state of journalism and what happened, and they want to uncover what happened with the aim of preventing it from happening again.
But
so we are open to that.
I mean, the people at the end of the story are the Sunday Times readers. I mean, and if you don't put your arms around them and hold them close to you, they'll leave.
It's not even just about the readers. Like I said, to me, it goes back to the question of public trust,
yeah.
The faith that, and also the role that the media is supposed to be playing. And if you are not playing that role, there's no way you can acting in the name of the public.
I mean, the Sunday Times really is, certainly used to be, and I think still is. I mean, people still, once you've got the habit, you've got the habit, and that's why newspaper businesses work. The Sunday Times is the national flagship. It really is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's listing really badly, and somebody's got to come to its rescue. Stimpy, so if you were on the Sunday Times, you're editing the Sowetan, also a big paper, important to its readers. What would you do if you were now in Bongani's position? I mean, what advice can you give him? Because, you know, all of us have edited papers. I'm not sure whether you've had the pleasure yet, France, but Max has, and the rest of us have. And it's not lonely, but you definitely, there definitely are some things that you decide on your own. And the more advice you get, you know, the better.
I think Bongani started quite well, and maybe the criticism can be on all of us because I worked under him. At the time when he started investigating the SARS story, maybe what we did, we delayed in looking at the Katomena story and delayed in looking at the rendition stories. Mm-hmm. But he started well because he came in and started hearing that there have been people who've been knocking at the door of the Sunday Times saying there is something wrong with the story, and they wanted to give their own side of the story. He's initiated meetings where we go and talk to those people and hear them out, did his own investigation. I think in that way he started quite well. But maybe what we didn't do well was to communicate all the decisions that had been taken. For instance, when the decision was taken that the unit could no longer operate the way it did, we never really explained to the public. So maybe some of those things that we needed to look at to just say that if we are going to win the public trust, we should demonstrate what steps we've taken since then. Because, I mean, if you look at the Sunday Times between, I would say, 2016 and now, it had done a lot of very good stories exposing state capture.
Yeah.
And that kind of stories would have not come our way if there had not been a change.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think, but we needed to communicate that to the public.
Yeah. I mean, I've always found, and this is why I did it when I was editing the Financial Mail and Business Day, was to have my own column in the paper, because I used it as a way of writing to readers and telling them what we were doing on the paper, and it worked very nicely.
Of newspapers.
Yeah.
I can tell you guys still actively in newspapers how important it is for readers to read an apology in a paper. Editors are always a bit scum to publish an apology prominently, but it helps the paper. People like it.
Yeah.
They like a journalist owning up to making a mistake.
Yeah.
And I think this is the effect that this could have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe here's an idea. Why don't the Sunday Times commission Omar Bongani?
I was just going to say that. You took it out of my mouth.
Give him $500,000 and say, do it for us.
Yeah. Well,
it will aid the whole project of journalism in South Africa.
Well, that's going to be a question for Mashweshwe then. I mean, because really, that's the way you
that's
do this.
That's a decision that I can't take now.
Omar Bongani puts one person, one or two people onto the Sunday Times story. They have free range throughout the company. And they write 10,000 words and you publish it.
It's not a decision that I can take now on this program.
No, but, I understand it. But like obviously I said, you're in a coin, but I mean, it's a good idea.
We are open to all the ideas. Like I said before, that it's not in our interest to say this cannot be done, and because, like I said, if the main objective, the primary thing that we want to achieve is to restore public trust.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think, you know, Max is completely right that readers, audiences like to see people owning up, newspapers, news organizations owning up. I mean, I think the worst thing that we can do is be defensive about these things. And I say we because this is not just about the Sunday Times, it's about journalism generally.
Yeah.
And I wanted to bounce something at you, Peter. I mean, about a week ago you were writing, all of this criticism is simply due to commercial rivalry and the Daily Maverick wants to sink the Sunday Times. I mean, it struck me at the time as a fairly superficial approach. Yeah. Do you still argue that?
There's a part of that. There's a part of it because there are some people who do pile into it. And Maverick, there were a raft of stories that appeared before that column, before it moved Bongani to write the apology. There was just this build-up of stories of sort of anti-Sunday Times commentary coming out of Maverick, and also from Alec Hogg in London. And one of the things that, you know, would serve them, they are media rival. There's no question about it. And if you knock the Sunday Times over, there's a nice big space for you to occupy. And so I'm not saying it's purely motivated by money, but neither am I saying when it's coming from rival media companies. Neither am I saying that it's completely public spirited. It can't be.
Sure, but I mean, to respond to that kind of criticism, I mean, we're now sitting a little bit later, and there's a finding from the Nugent Commission, which also points very directly at the Sunday Times.
Yeah.
I just think it comes across as defensive, and it comes across as raising flags that really don't deal with the substance. Because there's real stuff that's gone on here, and trust really has been harmed.
And I did say that in the article, too. You know, I mean, I know that I ended up with the money thing. But I mean, I made the point that what had been published in the Sunday Times has set us back a decade, and it has, and that people have been damaged in the process. So I do recognize all of that. I was just saying that don't forget that when this stuff has been coming out of rival media houses, that there's also another way of looking at it. I might have overdone it a bit, and I apologize. I apologize for that. But that is a huge story. There's no question about it. One more ad break, and then we'll be back for the last 15 minutes of the show. Welcome back. So the discussion during the break was you know, whether one goes the Omar Bongani route or whether we get some other unit or some other trusted investigator or investigative journalist to do the real story in the Sunday Times. You had a thought about that, Sembiso.
Yeah, my worry is that because there were too many interpretations of what had happened, both with the SARS story and with the Katumena story. I mean, in Durban, there are people who will tell you that, hey, we've been looking at the taxi violence for a very long time. Yeah. What probably surprised them was that the stories then focused on poisons when they were probably pointing at other generals and other policemen within that unit. So I was thinking, maybe the best way to investigate it, instead of maybe taking Omar Bongani away, which we always seen as writing counter to the other guys, we find another credible journalist or group of journalists who go and look at the story. And if
where
they are
would you find
such
people?
Sunday
I mean,
Times,
they're in short supply.
Surely there are lots of journalists in this country.
Well, you know, but I mean, the nice thing about Omar Bongani is that they enjoy public trust already.
Yes.
They're not a commercial rival to anybody, and they're very good at what they do. And I don't know. I'm quite drawn to, you know, I don't know how much it would cost the company to commission an investigation like that, Mosh. But, you know, if you want to get out of this jam, I can't think of a better idea than what Max has just had.
I agree. To some form of investigation. It might not take the form of what Max is suggesting. It might take the form of getting academic experts to look at, you know, in a forensic way to look at what really happened and to prevent it from recurring. That does not necessarily mean
maybe.
It might not necessarily. Let's say, for example, there is a panel of experts who looks at it. It does not necessarily mean we cannot use that to write a story in the Sunday Times. I think one of the British broadcasters did the same thing on themselves after the Iraq intelligence report failures, where they looked at what really happened.
I mean, what you don't want to do is do what Rupert Murdoch did. And when he got so sick of the news of the world, he just shut it down. I mean, in 24 hours, it was gone. How would you, Franz, how would you, let's leave what happened. How would you, if you were, you know, asked to consult on fixing the newsroom, where would you start? Because it's fundamentally the same newsroom that you studied way back when Mondly was editor.
Yes. I mean, I think one would start by having a look at whether it is the same newsroom and what has changed. You know, in his previous article, Bongani's Koko talks about having changed systems. So one would really like to understand what those changes are and the extent to which, you know, those have taken root and what difference it has made. Because it is, you know, these things flow out of, it, you know, newsrooms make themselves vulnerable to these kinds of mistakes, and journalism makes itself vulnerable by particular processes or absences of processes or relationships. You know, just to take one example, I think that what did play a role specifically in the Cato Manor thing, people have used the word narrative, you know, is that you were presented with a couple of facts. You could verify some of them. You maybe chose not to verify all of them. But what you bought into was the explanation for those facts. And that was where I think much of what went wrong actually went wrong. And you really need to build a voice of skepticism into the newsroom that says, hang on a minute, that may be one set of explanations, but here is another. And those are structural questions that become apparent in the way meetings are run, in the way copy flows from one place to the other, in the kind of responsibility that sits at the news desk, that sits in conference, those kinds of things.
Meetings, so that, you know, meetings are critical.
And the way in which those meetings are held.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were here, we found the meetings that we saw quite destructive in many ways of real excellence.
Well, that's what Simbisa was talking about. I mean, people were just shut down. It might not have been you. Somebody was. Somebody was certainly saying that a Sunday Times news conference was not a pretty thing.
He was raising that point.
That's because that's in your old
In recent years, it's been better than during his time. I was a junior reporter then, but I had the trauma of attending conference now and again. And it's been much better. But the specific problem here has been that your investigations unit didn't really account to conference in the sense that most of the time they will not be coming to conference because they are out there looking for stories, presumably. Yeah. And also, most of the stories will come together on a Friday or Saturday, which is just too little time to...
It is too little really time. There's not sufficient planning. Yeah. Max, I just wanted to just turn to Max on the phone again. Max, the sort of structure of newsrooms and conferences is the very heart of, I mean, the conversation is the heart of the newspaper because you can't.
Yeah, can you hear me, Phil? I think the conference that you have on a Tuesday, I think, with the Sunday paper, is crucial because that's where everything ferments and people go across specialities and give ideas, and it can be a very creative thing. But here's the thing that I think is not very popular nowadays, is the role of the editor. I don't know what the systems there are, but the one system that I insist from my own experience as an editor of a newspaper that had published highly risky stuff like Flock Plus and the CCB, the editor always has to know who is the source. So if Stefan comes with a fantastic investigation and it's based on a confidential source, if you can't persuade that source to meet with the editor, so the editor can look in this guy's eyes and say, I think we can trust this, then you can't run that story. That's how I always work. You know, I worked with Jacques Poe.
Yeah.
And he
must have met some real characters.
He was a wild guy in his young days. Yeah. And I insisted every time I had to meet Dirk Coetzee, I had to meet all those guys privately and be convinced that it's worth taking all these risks. So the role of the editor is absolutely, yeah, absolutely crucial.
I want to just turn quickly, Max, while you're still on the phone, to the victims of what has happened, and I'm talking about Ivan Pillay, Anwar Dramat, Pete Richer. What can be done for them that is obviously outside the scope of the newspaper, having apologized to them, but should we not be trying to talk to government as well about helping them out? I mean, you know, there's this great cry, we've got no expertise left in the Hawks, or we've got no expertise left in SARS. Well, those guys are experts. Why aren't they already back at their jobs?
Yeah. Well, some of them don't want to come back. I mean, you're touching on something that is very important. I know several of these people personally, and I cannot begin to tell you the devastation that this had caused in their lives. I mean, even a guy like Adrian Lacay, Ivan and Johan and Johan Boysen, Johan van Loffendach, Johan Boysen, Anwar Dramat, these guys' lives had been ripped apart.
Yeah.
And now we sit here as journalists and we care about ourselves. What about them?
Yeah, but that's what I'm asking.
Maybe the Sunday Times should do a piece on all of them and say, these are the guys who suffered as a result of this mistake, these mistakes that we had made,
yeah,
and we honor them. And I hope people like Anwar Dramat and so on can go back. But most of them are suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, but I mean, surely, yeah. I just wonder, you know, we write columns and you write a column and Jack writes columns and I write columns. Shouldn't we be putting some, even if they don't want to go back, surely they should be offered at least the opportunity to go back into an office and to begin to put themselves back together. But even if it's not in the same job, you know, it's just, but something that's fair and reasonable and
the knowledge and experience of Anwar Dramat, yeah, Shadrach Sabir,
yeah,
and Johan Boysen and Johan van Loffenberg, Peter Richer, Ivan Pillay, Adrian Lacay, a whole lot of them.
You can't get that from any other way.
No, you can't, and we desperately need it.
Well, somebody's, you know, I mean, it's no good sitting here saying somebody's got to do something, but it's hard to know. You know, the Sunday Times could probably do that, Hamish. I mean, I remember a very powerful cover of New York magazine after Bill Cosby had been accused of sexually molesting more than 50 women. And they went out and they found every one of them. They took their picture and they put their pictures on the cover. And it would be a very dramatic thing to do to the Sunday Times if they went and just acknowledged the victims perhaps more profoundly than they have. Simply to say not only that we're sorry, but we, as Max says, we honor you for what you suffered. Franz?
And explain themselves.
Yeah.
And that's terribly sad.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how one does it. Maybe each one gets to tell their story in a column once a week, once they've, yeah, been so honoured. But maybe these are all processes that we can do. But I wanted to ask Franz. Yeah, huh? And get paid for the column, yeah. But Franz, I'm not sure how much time we've got left, but it's not much. We've got 2 minutes, I'm told. Just wind this up for us. I mean, this is a terrible situation to which we've all, you know, we all recognize it. And, you know, as you say, I made my cynical contribution the other week. But I was trying to encourage Bongani, and I liked it. I'm glad I did that. I just wonder whether there's from someone as detached from the Sunday Times now as you are, whether there's advice that you could give to Moshweshwe that he could give to the managers when they return from China about this program, about what we can do going forward.
Well, I think it would start along the lines that we've discussed, and that I think there needs to be more work done to unpack exactly what went wrong in this particular case. Secondly, I think that there is going to need to be yet another look of some sort, internally or externally, at processes to identify the vulnerabilities that make this possible. I mean, if it's simply a question, as Stembiso says, of a unit, an investigative unit that kind of ran out of control, then, you know, and that's been dealt with, then maybe that's been dealt with. But I would certainly want, I would certainly think that one wants to look at that. But I think, and this is maybe not directed so much at the Sunday Times, but as I think we have to, all of us who are involved in journalism in one way or another, need to recognize that this has damaged us all. And we need to, and I mean, maybe SANIF, the SANIF initiative recognizes that. We need to recognize that as a profession, in a country where every now and again we hear talk of a media appeals tribunal and all of that kind of thing, we need to address the loss of trust that we've all suffered as a result of what's happened.
There we go. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us. That's it for tonight. We'll see you again next week.